Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Ksubas Daf Chaf. The rabbi left off yesterday at Yud Tes Amud Beis at Tana Rabbanan, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom of the page on Yud Tes Amud Beis. So today we are going to continue with the discussion of Kiyum Shtaros that we began yesterday. We're going to talk about in what situation we are able to be Mekayim, the Edim on a star, the signature of Edim on a star, based on another star that is presented on which these Edim also sign. So instead of a situation that we were discussing yesterday, where the Edim come and say, this is our signature, but, and then they want to qualify the validity of the signature by saying that they were anusim, or they were katanim, or they were whatever, that there was some duress associated with the signature. Over here, we're going to talk about what is needed in order to be mekayim edus on a shtar if the kiyum is being performed via presentation of another shtar to based in. So that's going to take up a lot of the daf. Then we're going to talk about what happens if Edim wrote down some of their testimony. So we know the testimony given to Beis Din has to be oral, but what happened, it has to be verbal, but what happened if Beis Din, if the Edim rather wrote down some of their testimony, and then they're prompted to remember their testimony by reading the shtar that they had written, B'shas Maisa. It's not that the shtar is testifying, but the Edim are referring to the shtar in order to remember, in order to conjure up their testimony. We're then going to talk about whether one aid is allowed to remind the other aid of the aidos that they intend on giving, whether the baldin is allowed to remind the aid of the testimony that the aid is supposed to be giving. And you could imagine the problems that may be attendant to that, right? That's a slippery slope if the baldin is allowed to remind the aid of the aidos that they're supposed to be giving. Then we're going to talk about how long ago something, or within how much time that has elapsed, something can happen, and we assume that the person is actually going to remember, have a memory of what it is that happened. So is it 10 years ago? Is it 20 years ago? Is it 30 years ago? We're going to see in the Gemara it's 60 years ago. For 60 years, a person is expected to remember what happened. So that means at least I'm in very bad shape. But then we're gonna try to bring a raya from old kvaros, and whether people remember that there were kvaros in a certain location, and it's gonna depend on how long ago the mace was buried there. Was the mace buried there 60 years ago or not? Then we're gonna try to make a chiluk between edus and kvaros as well. Also, today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. Also, l'zecher nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha. We thank the Landerer family very much for their sponsorship of this year. So again, 10 lines up from the bottom of the page, Yud Tes Amud Beis. Also, for those wondering, we have a different background because we're downstairs in the Simcha Hall. At long last, the fabrication of the stone on the Aron upstairs has started. Hopefully, it'll be well progressed by the time the rabbi gets back in a week and a half, and it'll be in a much happier mood when he returns. So says the Gemara as follows. Tana Rabbana, 10 lines up from the bottom of Yitzhah Sama Beis. Shnayim chasumin al ashtar. If you have two people who are signed onto ashtar, umesu, and then they died. So they obviously can't come to Beis Din and testify that the signature on the shtar is theirs because they're dead. So how are you mekayim the shtar? Uvo shnayim in ashuk viamru. And two people from the shuk come and say, yadanu sheksav yadamhu. We know that this is their signatures. Avol anusim hayu, but they signed under duress. Ketanim hayu, they were ketanim. Psule edus hayu, that they were pasul at that time, and that's what the Mefarshim explained. It doesn't mean that psule edus meaning that they were mesachei bakuvya, but rather it means that at the time they were pasul, meaning at the time they were krovim to the person whose shtar they signed. Harelu nemanim, then these people are believed. They're believed to verify the signature of the edim on the shtar. Why? This is the concept that we're well familiar with already in the second perek of Apeh She'asar. The only reason that we know that it's the signature of these edim is by the other edim that come and testify. The same way the other edim are believed when they come and testify, yes, this is their signature, they're believed to also qualify the signature as well. Okay, so this is standard Apeh She'asar. Ve'im yesh edim sheksav yadam zuzeh. But if there's already edim who say that, yes, this is their signature, osha yaksav yadam yotzim imakam acher, or if we can independently verify their signature on this shtar, mishtar shekorele irur v'huchzuk v'beistin, through a shtar which had been challenged in a previous court proceeding, but has been verified to contain the signature of these Edim, and then other Edim come and say, oh, the Edim who are signed on the shtar, whose verification has already been presented us through external means, those Edim were Anusim or Ketanim or Psula Edis or whatever, then Ein Eilu Ne'emanim, then they are not going to be believed. Why? Because now we've lost our Pesha Asar. Again, the Pesha Asar is only applicable when we know that it's the testament, when we know that it's the signature of these Edim because of the Edim who are now testifying in Basin. If we already independently know that it's the signature of the Edim, so the Shtar is already Mekuyam as is, new Edim are not believed to come into Basin and say, oh, by the way, these guys who signed on the Shtar, they were Anusim, because that is not HaPesha Asar, because we've established the validity of these signatures through external means. Says the Gemara, Umagbian Bay Kishtari Malya. Wait. So we have a shtar where we're able to independently verify the signatures because we compare their signatures to the signature of another shtar that was once challenged and based in and upheld. Good. And then we have Edim who come in and say that when these guys signed, they were Anusim, meaning the signature is invalid, the Edis is invalid, and you shouldn't believe the Edis. So we're going to ignore them, we're going to ignore that second set of Edim, because they no longer come from the Koach of a Pesha Asar who a Pesha Hitter. So we're going to ignore them, and we're going to pretend that they never existed, that they never testified, and we're going to allow people to collect on the basis of the shtar as if it were a perfectly valid shtar, even though we have Edim coming and testifying that the Edim on the shtar, when they signed on the shtar, were signing under duress, that it was an invalid signature. Is it possible that we're going to let them collect like it's a regular shtar? But isn't it a case of trey utrey? In other words, there were two Edim who were testifying that it was an appropriate signature, an appropriate Edis, and there were two Edim that are testifying that it wasn't an appropriate Edis. What's the trey utrey? So Rashi explains that the very witnesses who are signing onto the shtar, by signing onto the shtar, they're doing two things. Number one, they're attesting to the truthfulness of what's written in the shtar. Number two, they're attesting to their fitness to serve as Edim. When they sign on the shtar, they're attesting that they were valid Edim. So the people on the shtar are attesting that they're valid Edim. Now we have these other Edim coming into Beis Din and saying that when they signed the shtar, they were not valid Edim. They were not fit to serve as Edim. So why isn't that a case of trey utrey? And in a case of trey utrey, why is it that we're going to let the Baal Din collect with the shtar? We're going to pretend that the second Edim never existed. We're going to pretend that the Edim on the shtar are legitimate Edim, but we have a contradictory set of Edis here. Says the Gemara, Amrav Sheshes Zosa Meres, because the reason is that Hakhasha Tchilas Hazamahi, that Hakhasha, when you contradict the testimony on a shtar, that's sort of like the beginning of Hazama. Again, what's Hazama? Hazama is when we have a situation of Edim Zomamim. Again, just to refresh, Edim Zomamim is not that we're saying that when these Edim testified as to whatever they're testifying to, they were under duress or whatever. It's the saying that when these Edim testified, they're obviously lying, because when these Edim testified on whatever Maisa they're testifying to, they couldn't have seen it because they were in another place. So let's say you have two Edim who claim that Reuven borrowed $100 from Shimon. And then other Edim come and say, Reuven couldn't have seen, that the Edim rather couldn't have seen Reuven borrow $100 from Shimon, because this loan allegedly took place in New York, and these Edim, they were in Los Angeles, or they were in Chicago or Miami. They were somewhere else when the alleged act took place. That's Hazama. That's Hazama. Hakasha, contradiction, is what we have over here. That the Edim, by signing the shtar, are essentially attesting to their validity to serve as Edim. We have now other Edim coming and saying, no, they were never valid. Or, for example, if other Edim were to come and say that Reuven never borrowed the money from Shimon, that would be Akasha. So Akasha is like Tchilas Hazama. The Ritva explains that it's not really like Hazama, because by Hakasha you're being makhish the Edus. By Hazama, you are being makhish the Edim. In other words, by Hazama, you're basically saying that the Edim could never have seen it because they weren't with us. Hakasha means either that they were never able to testify, that they were ineligible to serve as Edim, or that the subject matter as to which they're testifying never occurred. But in other words, it's sort of like Hazama, because in both scenarios, you're discrediting the Edim or the Edis. Good. So Hakasha is like Tchilas Hazama. Now flipping to today's Daf, Techaf Amid Aleph, Ukashem Shem Ezimin Es Edim Ela Bifneim, Kachin Machishin Es Edim Ela Bifneim. And just like you can only have Hazama of the Edim in front of them. In other words, you have to be in front of the Edim who you're trying to discredit when you have Hazama. So too, you can only have Akasha when you are trying to discredit the Edus of Edim who previously testified. Why does Hazama have to be in front of the Edim? So Rashi explains, because what you're trying to do when you're being Mezim instead of Edim is you're trying to be Mechayiv them in Onesh, right? Because what's the Onesh for Edim Zomimim is Vasisim Lo Kasher Zomam Lasos Liachiv, that either you're going to be Chayiv them Mamon, you're going to be Chayiv them Misa, you're going to be Chayiv them some sort of Onesh. And therefore, if you're going to be mechayev them in onesh, the Torah says, v'hu ad bivalav, quotes Rashi, yavo balashor v'yamad al shoro. In other words, it has to be in its presence. It can't be a wimp. You got to testify in front of the guy. If you're going to try to be mechayev the guy money, or even worse, death, you're going to have to testify in front of the guy. Now, just like Hazama has to be in front of the witnesses, so too, Hakasha has to be in front of the witnesses. And this hakasha cannot be in front of the witnesses. Why? Because the situation that we're dealing with is that Edom signed on a shtar, the Edom are now dead. And we're trying to prove the validity of their edus through another shtar, or through other Edom who come and testify that they weren't really worthy of serving as Edom. But that's obviously shalob afanav, because the Edom are dead. Once the Edom are dead, we cannot have hakasha. Why? Because hakasha is compared to hazama. So says the Gemara now, three lines down, third line down from the top of Chaf Amid Aleph. So Amar Le Rav Nachman, so hold on a second. Says Rav Nachman, this doesn't make any sense. Ilu havi kamon umachishen lu, havi akasha, velo havi mashkechinam behu. David le edus mecheshes. So if the Edim were alive, and we had other Edim who came and said that, yes, this is their testimony, however, don't believe it because they signed under duress, or they were katanim, or they were otherwise ineligible to serve as Edom. So if those Edom were alive, if the initial Edom on the shtar were alive, we would accept the edus of the second set of witnesses, and we would discredit the shtar. We wouldn't allow them to collect on the basis of the shtar. So if these Edom were here, so we wouldn't listen to the shtar, because it's edus mekheshes. Hashta delesnu deilu havi kamon, Dilmahu Modiluhu Mamne. And also, by the way, now they're no longer here because they're dead. If they were here, there's always a chance that they would have admitted, yes, these guys are right. When we signed the shtar, we were under duress, or we were katanim, or whatever. And now we're going to believe them, and now we're going to collect we're going to allow them to collect. On the base of the shtar, it shouldn't really matter whether the Edim are here. In other words, maybe by Azama the Edim have to be there, because by Azama you're being mechayev of them Mamon or Misa. But by Hakasha, it doesn't make any sense to require that the Edim be here. Because if the Edom were actually here, we would accept the Akasha, we wouldn't allow the Shtar to be Mekuyim. Now the Edom are not here, we don't know how they would have reacted. It could be that they would have reacted by saying, you're right, and now we're going to validate the Shtar? That doesn't make any sense, says Rav Nachman. The Achronim ask, why, of what benefit or of what utility would it be if the Edim are Modef, the original Edim, if they were around and now other Edim come and say, oh yeah, by the way, they were anusim or they were ineligible to serve as Edim, what does it matter if the original Edim were Modef to those second guys? Isn't that a problem of Kivan Shehigid, Shuv Einechozer Umagid? So in other words, they've already essentially attested as to their validity to serve as Edim by signing onto the Shtar. Now when they say, oh, by the way, yeah, we agree with those guys, we were never really valid Edim, isn't that an issue of Kivan Shehigid, Shuv Einechozer Umagid? Why do we believe their admission? And so there are two approaches in the Achronim. One is that we don't really believe them in the sense that it's not accepted as Edus. It's not that it's accepted as Edus, because true, Kivan Shekid Shuvein Echozer Amagid, but even though it's not going to be accepted as real Edus, it still is a sniff on which to stand to be to passel the shtar. In other words, nobody's going to say that you have to be machshir the shtar, even if we're not going to accept their sort of backtracking as real edus. That's a very good reason to invalidate the shtar, because they themselves are undermining the efficacy of the shtar. And others say that the Shara Mishpat explains that it's not a problem of kivan shehigid shuvein uchozer umagid, because here there were other edim who have come and who have actually affirmatively said that these guys, when they signed, they were invalid, they were ineligible to serve as edim. These edim are now only admitting to that. We're not accepting their edus. They're just like sort of supporting the edus of somebody else, of another kat of edim, who are coming and saying that they were ineligible to sign. But the point here in the Gemara is, why is it that if the edim are not here, if the original edim on the shtar are dead, so they're no longer present, we are not going to believe the other edim when they come and say, yeah, by the way, that is their signature, however, they were a nusim, they had no business testifying as edim? Why is it that we're going to discredit that edus because it's hakhasha tchilas hazama, we're not going to be machash edim shalob afneim, we're going to let them collect on the shtar? That doesn't make any sense. If the edim were here, we wouldn't let them collect from the shtar. Now the edim are not here, we're going to let them collect with the shtar. Doesn't make any sense. So says the Gemara as follows. Ela amarav nachman uki trei lahade trei vuki mamona becheskas mare. Ah, so what happens is, not that we let the guy collect with the shtar, but rather it's a treyu trey and uki mamona becheskas mare. In other words, we're not going to validate the shtar and allow the guy to collect with the shtar. What it means is, because it's a treyu trey, we're going to maintain the status quo. We're not going to do anything. In other words, the money is going to sit with the person who's currently holding the money. In other words, if somebody is toface the money, if somebody grabs the money, we're going to let him keep the money. Tosfos over here on the top is very, very bothered by this. Tosfos divrei maskal v'uke. So we're going to read only part of it. So three lines down in that Tosfos, he says v'kasha. There's a sugya in the first parak of Baba Metzia called Tukfa Kohen, which is one of the most difficult sugyas in Shas to learn, but if you read it in the Daf Yomi, it's fine, because superficially it's pretty easy and it's a short daf. But if you get into the lumdas, you could spend like days or weeks on the sugya. But the point is that if a kohen grabs a suffik bechor, the bechor has to be given to a kohen. You have an animal which you don't know, is it a bechor or not? So the kohen grabs it, and we said motzino samiyado, that we actually pull up, we grab it back from the kohen. So says the Gemara, says Tosos rather, alma tfisa d'achar sveika lav klumi. So it's obvious, therefore, that a tfisa d'achar sveika, after there's a suffik that's been established, grabbing onto it isn't going to do anything. So why does Rashi over here explain that when we say uki mamona becheskas mare, meaning that whoever grabbed the money is allowed to keep it, isn't that money that's a mesupak, and therefore it should be motziya miyado? We shouldn't validate somebody grabbing the money. Tosfos a couple of lines later says v'yesh lomar d'shani gabe b'char shakoin tofes misafek den yodeim b'charhu avalocha shatoin bari mani tfisa. So there's a difference as to what the status of the tfisa is. By the Bechar, we're dealing with a Safek Bechar. So the Kohen, when he grabs the Bechar, the Kohen himself can never be certain that it's a Bechar. So the Kohen who's grabbing the Bechar is grabbing it because it's a Safek Bechar. Over here, whoever's grabbing the money, they really believe that they're right. In other words, in their mind, there's no Safek. They're coming with a Tainas Bari. Therefore, it's going to be Uki Mamona Becheskas Mare. It's going to be Uki Mamona Becheskas Mare. Okay, so says the Gemara now Viter. Midi dahavi anichse debar shatya. It's like nichse debar shatya. Who's bar shatya? So again, this is an example of the Gemara not being totally politically correct. Bar shatya was a guy who sometimes was a little bit mentally deranged, and sometimes he was normal. Shatya from the lashon of shote. So midi dahavi anichse debar shatya. It's like bar shatya. The bar shatya zaven nichse. Bar shatya sold some nechasim. Also be trei amri kishu shote zaven. Witnesses came and testified that bar shatya sold these nechasim when he was a shote. He was not with his mental faculties. And then another two witnesses came and said, no, when he sold this piece of property, he was chalim, he was normal. So there's a machlokas. Now, obviously, a normal person is capable of transacting. A shota, a person who's mentally deranged, is not capable of making or giving kinyonim, and therefore his kinyon would not be valid. So Amar Avashi uki trei lahade trei. So it says uki trei lahade trei v'uki mamona becheskas barshatya, and therefore the mamon should stay in the chazaka of barshatya, and therefore barshatya gets to keep, and barshatya gets to keep his money. So just like over here by metaltalin we said uki mamona becheskas mari, over here it's going to be uki mamona becheskas mari kama in the chazaka of the mari kama. Who was the first owner? Which is Barshatya. Tosfos over here says the Tosfos Dibra Maskal Vuki, which is on the first wide line. Vuki Ara Becheskas Barshatya. He says Dafka Bekarka Hu Damrin Anachi Avol Bentaltal and Armin and Davi Becheskas Hamuchzak. In other words, it's only by Karka that we're going to go after Cheskas Morekama. However, by Metaltalin, we're going to go after Cheskas Mara Dahashta. So in other words, by Metaltalin, we're going to look after whoever has the money now. By Karka, we're not going to look after who has the Karka now. We're going to look as to who had the Karka initially. So again, just like in our case, where we explain that if you have a tray, two witnesses say that the Edom on the Star were valid, two say they were invalid, it's Uki Momon of Cheskas Mare, we maintain the status quo. So too, Barshatya, two say he was deranged, two say he was normal. Uki mamona becheskas barshatya. We're going to let barshatya keep the property. V'lo amran, says the Gemara, eladisle chazaka davasa. That's only when he has a chazaka from his father, meaning he got the karka from his father. His father was a normal person with his full mental faculties. Therefore, Barshatya, when he inherited the land from his father, definitely owned the land. And the problem is, if he definitely owned the land and he sold the land when he could potentially have been mentally deranged, then he is unable to break the kinyan and to give the land over to the other person because he had a valid kinyan and he can't give it over in a valid kinyan. Avalesle chazaka davase. But he doesn't have a chazaka from his father. Then Armina kashushota zavin kashushota zavan ukshushota zavin, that he bought it when he was a shota and he sold it when he was a shota. In other words, that both the kinyan of coming into his possession and the kinyan of leaving his possession were on equal footing, and therefore, just like he was able to acquire the property, so too he was able to sell the property, and his mekach would be kayim. Okay, says the Gemara now, Viter, switching gears. Samar Avavo, Ema Zimenes Eidim Elabifneim, that we're only Mezim Eidim in front of them. Rashi explained the reason is because you want to be Machai of them Mamon or Nefesh, you want to be Machai of them Death or Money, and therefore that has to take place in front of them. Machishenes Eidim Shalobifneim, and you're Machish the Eidim even not in front of them. So unlike what we said initially, that Achashas Chilas Hazama, and just like Hazama has to be in front of them, so too Achashas has to be in front of them. Now we're saying not so. V'azama shalobifneyem, and azama shalobifneyem, let's say you want to establish Edim as Edim Zomamim, but they're not around. So nehid azama loavi achasha miyahavi. Even though it's not a hazama, meaning you're not going to be able to punish them on the basis of that other testimony, it is considered to be a akasha. You are contradicting the edus, and therefore it is going to be a valid akasha, even though we're not going to then punish the edim zomamim on the basis of this other testimony. Amar mar, im yesh edim sheksav yodam huzeh, osha yeksav yodam yotzim makam acher mishtar shekorelev irur, vuchzuk vebeistin einem onim. So in other words, what we said was, again, just to reset, if we have Edom on a shtar, and we don't know whether the Edom on the shtar are valid, we don't know whether that's a valid signature, and Edom come and say, yes, that's their signature, but they were anusim, and then they qualify the Edus, they're going to be believed. That's a principle, as we've seen, apesha asar. What happens if the Edom on the shtar are independently verified? Then these other guys come and say, oh, by the way, they were anusim. They're not believed, because now they don't have apesha asar, because we've independently verified the Edus on the shtar. There were two ways that the Gemara said that we can independently verify the Edus on the Shtar. One way is that other Edom come and say that's their testimony. The second way is that we bring another Shtar, which was challenged in Bastin and upheld in Bastin, and we compare the signatures and we see that it's their signature. And then these other guys come and say, oh yeah, but they were anusim. They're not going to be believed because the Shtar was Mekuyim through the comparison of the signatures from this Shtar to the other Shtar that was already Mekuyim in Bastin. So says the Gemara, but the way that the Gemara had said this is very weird. The only time that you're allowed to verify the shtar, on the basis of the other star is if the other star were challenged in Beis Din and it was Mekuyim. Why do I need that it had to be challenged in Beis Din? Why isn't it enough that it was Mekuyim in another court proceeding? Who cares if it was challenged as long as the court relied on it? Says the Gemara, Karalev Irur In, Lo Karalev Irur Lo. So the Mashmos is that if it was challenged previously in a court proceeding, then you're allowed to rely on it. If it was never challenged previously in a court proceeding, then you are not able to rely on it. We should note, you see the little Aleph, the Bach takes away this whole piece, because the Bach thinks that it doesn't matter whether it was challenged or not. All that matters is whether it was Mekuyim and Beis Din. But the Gersa that we have in the Gemara is that the only time you're allowed to verify the star on the basis of another star with similar signatures is if that other star was actually challenged in a court proceeding and the court upheld it after that challenge. So Mesayeh Leila Rabbi Yasi, it's a riot to Rabbi Yasi. Dem Rabbi Yasi, Emekayim and Esashar, Elim Yishar Shekor Lev Irevuch Suk Beis Din. Oh, just like that. The only time you're allowed to validate a star on the basis of another star is if that other star were actually challenged and upheld in a court proceeding. Amri Nardoi, the Nardoi say, Ein Mekayim and Esashar, Elim Yishtei Ksuvos. That the only time we're allowed to be Mekayim Ashtar is from Shtei Ksuvos, in other words, Ksuva Lavdavka, but there were Edom on a Ksuva, and we're learning Mesachas Ksuvas, which is why the Gemara uses that as an example. But in other words, it's not enough to verify or validate a signature on the basis of one other star. You have to use two other staros, Mishtei Sados, or on a star, or on Edom, or assigned on a star regarding the transaction of two fields. And in other words, if there are already two staros out there with a signature, then you're allowed to verify the signature on the third star on the basis of two other staros, but not only on the basis of one other star. And Rashi said, and the Gemara says that when we say that you're allowed to validate signatures on the basis of witnesses who signed for two other transactions, that's only when those transactions were actually upheld. In other words, when those were legitimate sales and not challenged. In other words, the people who bought those fields were actually able to eat a cheskas gimel shanim peacefully. There is a machlokes achronim, whether by ksuvas as well, that the people had to be married for 3 years peacefully. In other words, it's just like a mekach, just like a transaction, or whether no, by ksuvas, all that matters is that they got married. That already is enough of an edus that the edim, that enough isn't, that alone rather is enough of a proof that the edim on the ksuvas were valid witnesses and valid signatures, or whether it's just like a transaction, just like by a transaction, the only time you're allowed to use the star as a basis for kiyum of another star is if the transaction actually went through and the Baal was able to establish a chazaka peacefully or not, or whether we're not going to require that the couples who are the subject of these ksubas actually live together, were married together peacefully for 3 years. But regardless, what comes out in the Gemara is that the only time you're allowed to validate a star on the basis of other staros is if you bring two other staros, not only one other star. And also, the only way you're allowed to be Mekayim Edim on the basis of another star is where somebody else is presenting that other star to Beis Din. If it's the Baldin who's presenting that other star to Beis Din, then you have to be nervous for a forgery. Why? Dilma Zyufe Mizayev. Maybe we're afraid that maybe the guy is going to see this other star. He's going to see the signatures of the Edim on this other star. He's going to take a handwriting class. He's going to practice the handwriting. He's going to forge his signature on this new star. That's why the only time we're going to accept the other star as Kiyam Shtaros is if somebody else presents it to Basin. Says the Gemara, Maishna Tachas Yad Atzmo Delo Dilma Zyufe Mizayev. What's the problem? The problem is that we're if it's Tachas Yidei Atzmo Lo, because we're afraid that he's going to forge the signature. Mitachas Yidei Acher Nami Dilma Azul V'Chaza Asa V'Zayev. So maybe if he sees it in somebody else's house, he's going to study the signature. Then he's going to go back home and he's going to forge the signature at home. So what difference does it make whether somebody else brings it? Says the Gemara, Kuli Ayla Matsi Mechave. No, he's not going to be able to forge it that well. The only way he'll be able to forge it is if he's sitting and studying both Soros, and therefore we're only going to accept the Shtar as Kiyam Soros if it came from somewhere else. Tana Rabbanan, Kosei Vanda Meduso Al Ashtar Meir Aleha. new case. A person is allowed to write down some of his testimony, sort of contemporaneously. If he's asked to be an aide and he's afraid he's going to forget what he saw, he's allowed to write it down, and later on, he's allowed to be made on the basis of that written account, says Rashi, even after Kamashanim, even after many years. A fan that says the Gemara says, Afilu Achar Kamashanim. Even after many years, he's allowed to testify based on the written account of what happened at the time. So Amravuna Busha Zochro Miasmo. That's only if once he starts reading, he actually remembers it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Shein Zochro Miasmo, even if he doesn't remember it, he's allowed to be meyid. So the Mefarshim explained that when we say even though he doesn't remember it at all, it means that he's not immediately triggered when he starts reading. Obviously, after he reads it, he's got to remember what he wrote. If he's Pashat doesn't remember what he wrote, then that's not going to be valid testimony. That's not going to be a valid testimony at all. Tosfos says the reason is that he has to remember it. Is because if he's relying solely on the shtar, that's a problem of mipihem velo mipi ksavam. Because the edus has to actually be verbal, it cannot be written. Says the Gemara, Vayter, Amar Rabba, Shma Mina, Mid Rabbi Yochanan. So we see from Rabbi Yochanan, Hani betrayed the Adi Sadusa, that if there were these two people who knew testimony, Manchi Chan Minayu, and one of them forgot the testimony, Matker Chad L'Chavrei, that the other can remind his friend, and then they can testify as to it. Just like you're allowed to refresh your recollection on the basis of a written record, so too you're allowed to have your recollection refreshed on the basis of what the other witness is reminding him of. But again, the only time that this testimony is going to be accepted is if the recollection is really refreshed, if he really remembers after hearing it from the other aide or after seeing it written in the shtar. Says the Gemara Vayter, Iboilu, three lines up from the bottom, Atzmo Mai, can the litigant himself remind the aide of the testimony that he was supposed to be giving? So Rav Chaviva Amar Afilu Atzmo. So Rav Chaviva says, yeah, even the litigant can remind the aide. Mar Brei the Ravashi Amar Atzmo Lo. Mar Brei Ravashi says, no, the litigant can't remind the aide of the testimony that was supposed to be given, because think of the abuse that's going to happen if we permit that to happen. I mean, the litigant is going to remind the aide of whatever is in his own self-interest to have the aide testify about. Says the Gemara, Vilchaza Atzmo Lo, and the halacha is that it can't be the litigant reminding the aide, but another aide can remind the aide of what the testimony was supposed to be about. V'tzorva Merabonanu, and if he is a rabbinical scholar, Afilu Atzmo, then even the litigant is allowed to remind him. Who's the he? So predictably, there is a machlokas. There are some who say that the aide, if the aide is a rabbinical scholar, then the litigant is allowed to remind him, because the aide is an erlich guy, and he's only going to be meyid in court if it actually rings a bell. In other words, if whatever the litigant is telling him actually triggers an actual recollection. Others say, no, the person who's a rabbinical scholar here is the litigant. If the litigant is a rabbinical scholar, then we know he's an erlich guy, he's an upstanding Jew, and he would never try to remind the aide of false testimony. So if they're rabbinical scholars, whoever it is, then we are going to permit even the litigant to remind the aides of the testimony. So Kiyod Rav Ashi, just like Rav Ashi, Aviyodah B'Sadusa L'Rav Kahana, he knew aides about Rav Kahana, Samar Lei, and he said, Midach Yirmar Hai Sadusa, do you remember this aides? And Amar Lei and Rav Ashi said, lo, no, he didn't remember. V'lav Hachi V'Hachi Ave, and Rav Kahana said, oh, you don't remember? Wasn't it like whatever? Amar Lei, lo yadana, he said, no, I don't remember it. L'sof Itka Rav Ashi, but then Rav Ashi, it triggered something in his memory, and he remembered the aides. And Asid Lei, and then he testified, Chazil Rav Kahana, and he saw Rav Kahana davi machasem, that Rav Kahana was stammering. In other words, Rav Kahana couldn't believe that Rav Ashi came and testified on the basis of what Rav Kahana had reminded him of. So says Rav Ashi, Sami savret alach kasamichna. What are you afraid that I'm relying on you? No, ano derami anafshai v'itkari. All I needed was my memory refreshed. All I needed was to have my recollection refreshed. And now I've refreshed my recollection, and now I am testifying as to what I remember, and therefore this is going to be valid testimony. Okay, so the Mordechai says over here, also what we see is that when the witness says, I don't remember, that's not considered to be Eidos. Because if when the witness says, I don't remember, that's considered to be Eidos, then when he does go to court and provide the testimony, that's a problem of Kivan Shehigid, Shuvei Nechozer Amagid. So when the witness says, I remember, he stops saying, I don't, in other words, I forget when, I'm sorry. When he says, I don't remember, that stops saying, I don't remember. But if then he refreshes his recollection to the point where he's able to testify, that is his testimony, and that is going to be accepted. Okay, now that we're talking about people whose memory need to be refreshed, and when they forgot their edus, we're going to talk about other things that might be forgotten, and specifically burial places. It's not awesome. So we learn as follows. Hatlulios, mounds, which mounds of dirt, and it's the Derech B'nai Adam, says Rashi, says to bury their dead in a tell, and in a mound of dirt. So Hatlulios Hakrovos, if they're close to the city, Bein Le'ir, Bein Le'derech, whether they're close to the city, close to the derech, Echad Chadoshos, Ve'echad Yeshanos, Tameos. If they're close by, whether they're new mounds or old mounds, they're going to be Tameh, because we're going to assume that somebody used them as a burial place. Herchokos, if they're far away from the city, Chadoshos, Tahoros. If they're new, then they're Tahar. Why? Because we assume that people are first going to use the mounds that are closer to the city to bury the dead, and they're not going to use the mounds that are further away from the city. But Yeshenos, Tameos, but if they're older mounds, then they're going to be Tamei, because we're going to assume that they're being used as burial places. Ezu, Krova, what's considered to be close? We had said that if they're close by, then whether they're new or old, they're going to be Tamei. If they're far away, then only the new ones are going to, only the old ones are going to be Tamei, not the new ones. What's close and what's far? So close is Chamisha Mama, 50 Amma. Vezu Yishana, Shishim Shana. What's old? 60 years. Divri Rameh, Rav Yudomer, Krova, Krova, it's all relative. Krova means doesn't necessarily within 50 Ammas. Shein Krova Emeno, that there's nothing closer to the city. Yishana, Shein Adam Zochra. And Yishana also, it's relative. It doesn't have to be 60 years. It means some that people don't remember whether there's anybody buried here. My ear or my derech. What's ear and what's derech? Ilema ear mamish, derech, derech mamish. If it really means a city or a road, then misaf misfeka mimach zakin and tuma. Are we really going to say that any mound which is close by to a city or a derech, whether it's new or old, is going to be tameh? We're going to willy-nilly just go and indiscriminately say that parts of Eretz Yisrael are tameh. Vamreish lokesh ila matzu v'tiro Eretz Yisrael, that they had a pretext and they were matar Eretz Yisrael, meaning that they think very carefully and they act very carefully before their matame parts of Eretz Yisrael. Summer of Zera, iras mucha leveis akvaros. It means a city which is close to a beis akvaros. V'derech derech beis akvaros. And it means the road going into the beis akvaros. So says the Gemara, well, I understand why the derech beis akvaros would be tame. Bishlama derech beis akvaros, the zilma de misrami ben ashmasos, so mikre kavru betel. Because sometimes the funeral's on a Friday, people are going to the beis akvaros, Shabbos comes, they don't have time to get all the way to the cemetery, so they have to bury in a tell on the side of the road. But if the city's close to the Beis HaKvaros, why is any part of that city Tameh? Everybody would just go to the Beis HaKvaros to bury their dead because it's so easy. No, because women might bury their miscarried babies there, and Mukeshchin, whose limbs fall off, might bury their limbs, and a limb of a person is like Eivor Min HaChai. Eivor Min HaChai is like Eivor Min HaMeis, and therefore the Eivor is going to be Metameh. Okay, so they might bury their fetuses or their limbs in the city and not go to the Beis HaKvaros. Ad chamisha mama azli, if it's within 50 yards of the city, they'll go there. I l'chuda, she'll go there herself and bury the dead baby there. Tvei davra inish ba'ado l'Beis HaKvaros azla. But if it's further away from the city, we're going to say that it's tar, because once she's already leaving the city, she's just going to go to the cemetery. Hilkach tumah b'Eretz Yisrael l'machzak zakinan. And therefore, based on this, any mound that's further than 50 amos away from a city, we're not going to be machzik tuma, because we're going to assume that the person just went to the Beis HaKvaros. Some Rav Chisda, why are we quoting all this? Shmami namad Rav Meir, because we see from Rav Meir who said that what's considered yeshana, something which is 60 years old, hai sadusei testimony at shisen shana midkar tfeilo midkar. A person's only going to remember for 60 years. More than that, he's not going to remember. Why? Because this mound is 60 years old and nobody remembers whether there's a mace buried there or not. Says the Gemara, v'lohi, no. Hasamudula ramialea. It's only by by the mound where nobody's called upon to remember whether there's a dead body there. We assume people are going to remember only for a 60-year period, not longer than that. But by testimony, since it's incumbent on him to remember it, and therefore he's going to pay closer attention, even if it happened more than 60 years ago, he's going to be able to testify as if he remembered, because he's paying attention in order to remember. All right, we'll stop here. We'll pick up with the Mishnah on the bottom of Chaf Amabez tomorrow. Hope everybody has a wonderful day.